Say hello and welcome. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Today we continue our conversation with Ashley Colley-Bull from Enoch Cree Nation in Northern Alberta.
Yeah, honestly, it makes me so happy to see all this representation everywhere. But like I said before, I'm like, why did it take so long, you know? There are people that have been doing this for so long, like even before me. My late uncle Gordon Tatousis was the one that really encouraged me to get into acting and to see that there's actual Indigenous writers and actors, and to Cannes Film Festival in a couple days here. And I'm going to be walking the red carpet for the premiere, The Killers of the Flower Moon. And that movie has actual Indigenous actresses at the forefront of that film. And that is like so amazing to see, because that's one of the biggest film festivals in the world. And once they step onto that, you know, that carpet and people see this, like, it feels like they're seeing all of us. So spaces and when you're dominating, we're finally really being seen and knowing that there's so much more talent out there as well. So for me, it's just so exciting to see.
And of course, you know, with a lot of those firsts, you know, that you've done thus far, I have to ask, what was your mindset when you got the call saying, hey, Ashley, we want you to be featured in Sports Illustrated, being the first ever Indigenous woman to be featured in Sports Illustrated?
Oh, I was so proud. I just remember I got the call almost like 6 months, if it was going to I was going to get chosen or not. Like, you're just happy and very, you know, open to any kind of opportunity with them. And when I got the call, I remember I was so happy. I thought I was still dreaming and sleeping. I rolled over and like cried to my husband. I was so happy, and it didn't even sink in when I got there. I just thought like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm shooting Sports Illustrated. This is like all the big supermodels have done this. Like, it's just crazy, because, you know, it always comes back to me being who I was in the reserve. And like, I would have never imagined these things for myself. And now that these things are happening, it's because I changed my mentality when I was in high school to really push for who I'm going to be 5 years from now. That's the type of mentality I had, was who am I going to be? Am I going to be the best version of myself? How hard am I going to work? You know, I kept thinking of the future. So with that mentality now, I'm like, you know, I can't imagine where I'm going to be 5 years from now.
And of course, with that mentality, it also took you to many places, as well as, you know, going with your stepfather, Joel, on The Amazing Race Canada. Talk about your experience in that show.
That was the best. So, like, one of the craziest things I've ever on that show. And when we finally got on, I remember, you know, doing things that I would never do on my own time. Like, I would never bungee jump mountains. I wouldn't try it again twice, and I did a bat and live bugs and all these things on my own. I never thought I could learn to fly a warplane within a certain amount of time and do it on that. I thought I wasn't, but on that show I realized that I am limitless. I realized that, you know, if I set limits for myself, then that's where, you know, my dream, I start thinking like I can accomplish anything. The other side of fear, then of course, why not? Why can't I? And because of that show, it's really opened my eyes to seeing things differently in the world. Also embracing and just having a fearless attitude of like, look, next, you know, what can I overcome? So that show was amazing. I highly recommend that for anyone who wants to see the world in a different way and just have an amazing.
And, you know, like, I always used to watch that show and be like, Dad, let's do this. And he'd be like, no, I could run faster than you. But I have to ask as well, you know, as a motivational speaker as yourself and an advocate for Indigenous culture, what does National Indigenous Peoples Day mean to you, Ashley?
It's a great day to celebrate all of us, you know, where we come from, the beauty of our culture, the strength from it. But to, you know, we are still here. That's what I think is the most powerful part about it, is that not only are we showing like all the Canadians, but also showing them that, yes, they can be an ally. They can learn to educate themselves and instead of having that separation. So that day is a big day. You know, I wish we could celebrate all year. I mean, you can celebrate being Indigenous every day, but not, you know, not just for the celebration of us, who we are, and for those who want to take part and learn more about us. That's just like such a beautiful day to celebrate.
And of course, now can you talk about the importance of getting more involved with Indigenous culture and the teachings that follow with it, and how it could, you know, build a person's character even more, let alone teach you life lessons as well?
Yeah, all my friends that are non-Indigenous, I would say, are an amazing ally because they take the time to. It's not up to Indigenous people to teach you everything. Resources or places that you can learn or things that you can read up on your own. But it's really up to the person to really take part and to learn. Friends, for example, who aren't Indigenous so much on their own, they've even done the free courses online that you can do at the University of Alberta, and anyone can do that. You know, they go out of support, like Indigenous artists, Indigenous brands, part in powwows and events that, you know, things that my family has had, and they've really like wanted to learn, and they realized that like everyone is family, and they realized like how welcoming it was. So people get nervous, especially if they're not Indigenous. They're like, are we okay to go to a powwow? You know, are we okay to take part in intertribals, like to send? But that's the number one thing is, oh, you got first thing you got to do is ask, and then then you're past it all. And then they realize that, yes, we want you to take part. Yes, we want you to be allies so we can move together. And all they got to do is take that.
Yeah, and you said it better myself, that, you know, I the amount of times I get asked is, am I okay to go to a powwow? I just took my buddy Ryan, he works with us, and he's non-Indigenous, and he was so excited to go to a powwow up here for Ben Calf, and I remember just watching his eyes just go, wow, like, this is amazing, like, this is what a powwow is? I say, yeah, and you're going to go to a lot more in the future.
Yeah.
And of course, I have to ask as well, you know, growing up, you must have learned a lot of Cree words here and there. What was the first Cree word that you ever learned to say? For me, what I didn't know was a Cree word was cook or was chopon, which means great grandmother.
Well, I think probably like cookum or mushum, but like I heard a wuss a lot.
that's another one. A wuss.
Like all the time, like a wuss or a stum, like it's like one or the other.
And I used to hear a couple of swear words too, but like I can't say that on
never
voices.
Allowed.
I know, but
and like, no, that doesn't exist.
Exactly, and not only that, but it's just like I remember, like it would just be like the crazy thing is, you know what I used to hear growing up with my family members is that, you know, depending on the language of Cree that you learn, it all depends on how down you go down the boot, in a sense. If you say Namwainanto, some people say Nando, or they do shortcuts with the Cree words. And I'm thinking, well, what happens if I sit down with an elder and I go Nando, and they're like, huh? Like, what? what are you saying? that's what I'm fearful of.
And versions of everything.
Well, and that's the thing, right? And, you know, and I've sat down with a lot of elders, you know, like Wayne Jackson, Dr. Reg Croshu, and Elder Gilman Cardinal, just to name a few. What would your advice be to, you know, especially with the newer generation that follows us, what would your advice be to them to, how can they embrace the language if they ever want to learn it?
For Indigenous youth, you know, there's so many opportunities. Honestly, how I found my opportunities was just looking on my Reserve's website and their Facebook page, because they'll always be posting about like when someone is going to be teaching Cree, and there's always classes going on somewhere in Edmonton. So a lot of the pages I follow on Facebook are all these Native pages or Native Friendship Centers, and they always post like when things are going to be happening. And sometimes because of COVID, like since then, a lot of things are virtual. And I'm like, well, why not? Like, why not take this opportunity? I'm like, if you have time to, you know, go to a movie, you have time to learn your language, right? And plus, like, that's something, you know, we want to be able to pass on and not lose. Because, you know, when my Mushroom talks at home, like, I can pick it up. But it's like, am I able to teach it? No, but I want to be able to, like, learn more so I can be able to, like, let my future children know and my grandchildren, because it's the one thing I don't want to lose.
And, of course, you know, from what I've seen thus far over the past year is a lot of good stuff, especially with the language. You know, I sat down with Fawn Wood, and she was able to, basically bring the language within to music, not only just herself, but a lot of others as well. When you see the language being, introducted into the world of music and even acting, like, you know, I spoke with Wayne Jackson. He said that we're in a day and age now where we can look at Prey and just say, okay, let's just ask them, like, hey, like, we have a Cree speaker like Wayne Jackson who can just basically narrate the male parts within the movie entirely in the Cree language. And, of course, Peter Pan and Wendy that just came out, they actually spoke the language. What's your take on all that?
I think it's so amazing. Like, Fawn is amazing, and also Alyssa, who plays, she plays Tiger Lily in the Peter Pan film, speaking Cree. Like, that's so beautiful to see, because, you know, that's my language, and never would you imagine, like, Disney would do something like that. And to see it now, it's like, okay, perfect. There is that proper representation that we need. And to also show that, yes, we can be mainstream. We're not like these characters in a movie, you know what I mean? When people think of us, they always think of stereotypes. But to see us in these mainstream spaces, that's where we need to be. That's where we need to be at the head of the table, is, you know, making decisions and saying, yes, we're going to be doing it this way because this is the right way. So when I see, like, Fawn and Melissa doing these amazing things, I'm like, there's so many other outlets that we can be doing it as well. And, like, for example, them doing Cree for NHL games, that itself is, like, major. So us dominating all these spaces, we need more of that.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because, you know, when I started my career within getting into the world of broadcasting, I got asked the question, being the only Indigenous representation within my whole class of non-Indigenous classmates, I always got asked, like, well, what are you going to do when you graduate? And my goal before CFWE came about was, I said, I want to be a sports broadcaster. I want to get into the world of sports, but to do it in the language, that's my main goal. That's my main priority. So to myself, not only to myself, but to the listeners that are aspiring to come into the world of broadcasting for sports, what would your advice be to get into that world? How can they do it?
For me, I really was all about making connections and making sure that my voice is heard and that my needs are important. You know, I had a meeting with TSN where they flew me in, and it was just like this amazing treatment. But I also told them I needed to have a meeting with the heads of TSN. And I remember sitting there at the table, and it was all men, all old white men. And I'm just a young Indigenous woman, but I made my voice heard. And for me, that was so important, is that not, you know, settling for anything. Never settle for anything less than your worth, 100%. Know your worth. And also, when you are making connections and networking with people, it's so important in the day that we live in to have a business card or a website or a profile of some sort, because everyone now, they look online to see, you know, who your persona is. And if you're getting into the field of broadcasting, it's so important to showcase your talents, what you're good at, and to have an amazing reel. And, like, say for me, when I first started, I was at Nate doing broadcasting. The only reel that I had was things that I created or people that I interviewed around the school or in the city. And I made that on my own. So now, like, I would say I could have a great reel from the work that I do. But when I first started, I was really creating my own, writing my own story, shooting my own stories, and making sure that I made those connections and everywhere I went. Even if it was, like, you know, in my town in Edmonton, going to CTV, CBC, all these different stations, making sure everyone knew who I was and knew my name and had my card. For me, it's about making connections, because you never know who you're going to meet and who you're going to come across. And that's exactly like what happened with TSN. That's what happened with the CFL, you know, Sportsnet, all these things. It's about me making those connections and letting my voice be heard and showing them, hey, this is who I am. I'm here to do the job and I'm here to do it well.
That was Ashley Colley-Bull from Enoch Cree Nation in Northern Alberta. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Dana Barker-Tremblay. Next, we continue our conversation with Kung Jade from Squamish First Nation.
And our own sense of pride and our own sense of self-worth and even self-esteem.
School now for several years, almost 10 years now. But back then, I just remember, like, the only thing that was mentioned was the Buffalo Jump. And nothing else. There was nothing else mentioning of any of the Chiefs, the culture, or anything like that. Heck, even when I was in school, I remember at one point we had language class. Like, they would actually teach Cree. And one day, just without any warning, they just said, we're not teaching Cree anymore. They taught other languages like Spanish, Arabic, and French. But Cree was just removed, and then shortly after, they would replace it with Native Cultural Arts, which would teach you how to bead, which was okay, but what happened to learning Cree? Like, I was enjoying it. I remember we were given an ingredients in Cree of how to make bannock, and my bannock came out like a hockey puck, but I was like, I didn't learn Cree fresh, you know, fresh growing up and everything else. And, you know, and I don't know if it's like this, you know, up in BC, but I know for here in Alberta, when I used to ask my mom, I used to say, Mom, like, I want to learn how to speak Cree. And for years, I didn't even know that I was speaking it, because I wasn't told it was a Cree word. Like, my Grandma Bella, who I always used to refer as my Grandma Bella, or Chapon, which means great-grandmother in Cree, I didn't even know that's what it meant. I just used to say, hi, Chapon, and she'd be, hi, little one, and all that stuff, right? But I didn't know that was Cree until when I started working here. I was like, really? Chapon is Cree? So, you know, and so in regards to the language as well, you know, how important is it for those that, you know, may not have grown up surrounded by the language to get involved into learning how to speak the language, especially when it comes to Haida language as well?
I think it's especially important. It's one of the things that I keep hearing over and over again, you know, like, from a lot of Indigenous people, whether they be elders, you know, mainly it's elders, but if we do not have the language, then we do not have the culture. And there is so much in our languages that cannot be translated into English. We just don't have the language for it. And one of the things that I learned early on, once I was learning our language, is how there are these huge portions of our language that can't be translated into English, and it's actually much more descriptive. Our languages are way more beautiful than English ever could be. English, it feels very limiting to me, and all of our Indigenous languages, you know, a lot of it has to do with verbs, so they're action words. Not always, but a big part of it has to do with that, because our language is a living language. And the other part that I noticed about our language is it's really quite humorous. You know, like, Indigenous people are the funniest people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Yes.
With, you know, and it could be in English or not, but one of the things that I did notice is listening to elders telling stories with each other, most of it is just laughter the whole day. And it made me think, well, I want to learn more of this language so that I can get in on that, because I love laughing. I mean, everybody was laughing, even if they didn't know what they were laughing about. But later on, if you know, like, I remember even hearing from my father, because his father, my paternal chinny or grandpa, he spoke the old dialect of of our language, and it no longer exists because he was raised by his own grandparents. They were very old people, and they raised him in a very traditional way. And because he went to Kogalita Residential School in Sardis here in BC, close to Chilliwack, here on the Lower Mainland, he didn't teach his language to any of his 10 kids. But and he was the storyteller that I knew about. But my dad said he remembers his dad telling him stories about how, you know, pretty much every evening, everyone would go down onto the beach because the village is right, you know, all facing the beach. They would light a bonfire and they'd sit around the fire and they would tell stories all night long and just laugh and laugh. The kids would be around and they'd get to hear it. And my dad must have been there at one point because, you know, he was trying to ask his dad, like, well, what does this mean? And his dad would try and tell him, but he'd say, but, you know, it doesn't sound funny when I translate it into English. It's only funny in our language. You know, it just loses a huge component of, you know, the story is just completely lost once you translate it into English. It's funnier in our language. And that's what I found, too, is like, you know, whether we're around other Indigenous people or not, we've got a great sense of humor and we laugh about a lot of things, which I totally love because laughter is healing. And yeah. I believe tears are healing, too. And actually, both are good. We're meant to express all of our emotions, but I do speak my language every day and I translate, you know, into English because I'm often surrounded by people who don't understand it. I am mentoring my youngest child in the language for the third year. And after just 4 sessions, we were speaking fluently with each other. And it made us laugh even harder. We just thought, how could this happen so quickly? It's phenomenal.
Well, and you know, like, I remember growing up too as well, like, I would be little and my mom would be surrounded by her family members who are also that speak Cree. And my mom never spoke it, but she understood it. She would speak little words here and there, you know, saying tapwe or ihe or hi-hi and all that stuff. But I remember, and I asked her, I said, well, what's everyone saying? And she's like, adults are talking. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then as I grew older, they only spoke Cree when the little ones were around so that they didn't know what they were talking about. They would laugh. They would sing in Cree as well. And, you know, my grandma, my Chapa, my grandma Bella, and my grandma Leona especially, they were like the glue of the family. And all elders are glue of the family, especially when it came to humor. And I joked with my Uncle Sam one time because he used to call me Monkey Man. And I said, that's not my elder name, is it? He said, it could be. So I have to ask as well is as a writer, when your books were released to the public and you saw your books be available for purchase as well as being available in schools and in children's hands, what was your first thought when you saw that?
I was amazed, and I still get amazed because I have friends that, you know, they take pictures of either students, you know, holding my book, or a teacher has my book on their desk, you know, they're going to use it, I guess, for a lesson. You know, I remember on Truth and Reconciliation Day, you know, on September 30th, someone sent a picture of my book on a display in a window, you know, along with like a raven sculpture. And Raven is the clan that I belong to. So they had, my book was prominent right in the middle there. I'm like, holy cats, this is really, I really am deeply touched by that. I always am, and bowled over by it. And sometimes people don't know when they meet me, you know, they're that I've written a book. They're like, oh, you wrote this book? I'm like, yes, I did. Sometimes people don't believe me at all. And that makes me think eventually I might get brave enough and officially change my English name to my traditional name. But for some reason, my mother does not like me using my traditional name. She only uses my English name. I guess it's just part of what she knows. And so she's the only one, you know, and maybe one cousin, you know, kind of who still does it. But everybody else calls me Kung Dede because I insist on it. But when I see how, you know, when I hear from parents, you know, about how much, or even directly from students, how much they love my book, it makes me so grateful that, you know, that it's still out there and doing that and enjoying it. I mean, even the local bookstore in my neighborhood, they keep it in stock. They're an indigenous owned and operated bookstore here, and they are so awesome. So I love to go in and support them. And I mean, I know I don't need any more books, but I keep going in there anyways because I can't resist. I'm like, you know, my partner is like, well, let's go to the library instead. And I'm like, no, I need this book. It wants to go home with me. But yeah, what can I say? It's I love giving it as a gift. If there's like a new baby in the family or a friend, or sometimes there's a fundraiser. Like there was a fundraiser I supported this young Indigenous mom whose baby ended up getting cancer, sadly. I think she's winning that battle, but I sent copies of my books, you know, to help with raffles and stuff like that, because it's really, really difficult. We all live in small communities, and when we live in a small community, it means we have to go to a bigger city to actually get all the treatment that we need. And, well, you know, I'm going on 26-year cancer survivor myself, so I understand what it means to be really unwell and to come out of that and to be supported, to be completely loved by people, and people that I didn't even know, you know, kind of thing. So it feels to me like giving back.
Mm-hmm. And congratulations on that survival as well, as a cancer survivor as well. You know, I have to ask as well, you know, what would your advice be to not only the newer and the younger generations that follow, but to current generations as well? What would your advice be about getting involved into the culture, history, and also becoming a successful writer and storyteller?
Well, I think my advice would be, if they have elders, you know, that are still alive, either in their families or from their communities, and whether it be an urban community, because I think a majority of us live, you know, live in cities now, because there just isn't, you know, there might not be the capacity on our reserves, or there might not be jobs that can help sustain us and our families. So I think finding elders that have that knowledge about the culture, about the stories, or about the language, about the seasons, you know, and the different things that we do, you know, throughout the whole year, you know, kind of thing. I think that might really help. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of Indigenous storytellers, and I know my father actually knows a lot of the stories, but he likes to say that he's not so smart, but I believe that some of these elders, the stories don't come back until they're actually on the land. And it's the same with my dad. I remember the first time he told me a story, it had to do with our dormant volcano, which is called Taustele or Toe Hill. And he told me the story as we were driving towards it. And he's like, did I ever tell you that story? And I'm like, I didn't know it had a story. I had no idea. I just took it for granted, right? You know, just like you were taking for granted that word in Cree, you know, you didn't know it meant great-grandmother. And I think it's the same for a lot of Indigenous kids, you know, like we might have some words that we just assume everybody knows. And we realize later, oh, no, that's our own language. And my dad told me this story, but, you know, I'm pretty certain if if I could go hunting with my dad, which isn't part of our culture because I'm a female, I probably wouldn't be allowed to do it. But, you know, he would know a lot of stories that have to do with hunting, with fishing, with being on the water, being on the land. And I think that's where a lot of the stories are going to happen, whether it be like gathering medicines, you know, in certain times of the year, whether it be sage or sweetgrass or other medicines that are going to help us throughout the year. Like if we get a cold or if we have arthritis or something like that. That's one of the things that I noticed about elders is they come alive when you, I don't know if it's going to be always possible, but I'd like to wish that it could be possible, you know, whether or not we live in a big city or not, that somehow we start to develop a way to get back to the land with these elders so that we can reclaim our stories, reclaim our languages, or then maybe even reclaim our songs and our dances and all those different things that really help us to connect to who we are, because I think that is going to be a huge step. It's going to be a huge step in our own self-identity and our own sense of pride and our own sense of self-worth and even self-esteem.
That was Kung Jadae from Squamish First Nation on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Ashley Colley-Bull and Kung Jadae. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.